Hello, this is Carrie Weber, Managing Editor for America Magazine. Today we're speaking with Matthew McGarry, who has been the country representative for Catholic Relief Services in Jerusalem, West Bank, and Gaza since July 2012. He is responsible for overseeing approximately 60 staff members in four offices, as well as a range of programming, including humanitarian assistance, civil society, peace building, advocacy, and youth development, all aimed at serving vulnerable Palestinians. He has also served with CRS in Zimbabwe, Sudan, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. Matt, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I wonder if we could start out just with a little overview of the current conditions in Gaza, especially given the flooding there in December and sort of what is life like there right now?
Well, I mean, life in Gaza is it's difficult under the best set of circumstances. That it's an incredibly densely populated place. It's 1.8 million people living in a very small strip of land. They're getting their water from an aquifer that's been contaminated. There's very stringent restrictions on their ability to move people and goods both in and out of Gaza. There's only about 20% of the land is actually arable. It's a net food importer. It's a difficult place. And really those already difficult circumstances have been exacerbated in recent months, certainly with the flooding that you mentioned in early December, which displaced about 6,000 households. It damaged schools, damaged infrastructure, caused some overflowing of sewage containment pools. And it also did pretty extensive damage to the agricultural land that is productive in Gaza. On top of that, with some of the changes in the political situation, the movement across the Egyptian border and through the tunnels has also been greatly reduced, which has led to additional fuel shortages, which have led to rolling electricity blackouts, which have led to breakdowns at the sewage treatment plant, increase in unemployment, you know, loss of facilities for water purification, again, because the aquifer is contaminated. All the water has to be purified before it can be consumed. So really, you know, what is ordinarily a fairly precarious, difficult situation for the, you know, the 1.8 million people who live in Gaza has gotten even more worrisome, more difficult, you know, increasingly approaching towards a full-fledged humanitarian crisis.
Is there one issue that you think is the most pressing?
In Gaza, no. I mean, it's a whole host of different kind of mutually reinforcing factors. And so again, the restrictions on movement and access, you know, the contamination of the aquifer, the high levels of unemployment stemming from the lack of economic activity, difficulty in really growing food within Gaza that requires, you know, imports of food for the population there, just the sheer density of people. It's all, you know, each factor contributes to the other and creates this really kind of complex milieu of mutually reinforcing challenges for the people in Gaza. And ultimately, of course, you know, irrespective of the larger political situation, it's the people, it's the women, the men, the children in Gaza who suffer because of the conditions there.
How are people adapting to the conditions?
Well, it's an incredibly resilient place. I mean, you have to be in order to get by in a place like Gaza. And so strong community structures, people do what they can to get by. Certainly, you know, the work of the United Nations and international relief organizations like CRS, we try to do the small bit that we can to support people. But it requires kind of constant adaptation and innovation and resourcefulness on the part of communities and individuals to get by under these increasingly difficult circumstances.
And what about young people in particular? Are you seeing them leaving the region? Are they trying to build it back up?
Well, I think, you know, probably many more of them would leave if it wasn't so difficult to get out of Gaza. But again, there's only really two access and entry points, you know, one through Israel and one through Egypt. There are always fairly substantial restrictions on movement out of Gaza through the Israeli crossing. The restrictions on the crossing through the Egyptian side have really been ratcheted up in recent months as well. So there's not a lot of out migration, though there probably would be if it was more logistically feasible. Quite a bit of our work is with young people. That, you know, part of our strategic focus is on youth empowerment, youth engagement. So we've done a fair amount of youth employment, job skills training, job placement in recent years. We're currently working with hearing impaired youth in southern Gaza, trying to develop some of their job skills and help them access employment. Because, you know, while employment in Gaza broadly is 33-35% or higher now with some of the decrease in economic activity, it's significantly higher for youth, that young people particularly you know, it's a very well-educated population. There's a lot of recent university graduates who are very, very talented, very, very motivated coming out of university, but there's just very, very limited opportunities for them. So that, of course, with a significant youth bulge, you know, with a heavy kind of demographic slant towards young people, without many opportunities for them, with, you know, fairly broadly educated youth population, it creates a lot of frustration. It creates a lot of resentment. It creates a lot of desperation. And it's something that we really see in a loss of hopefulness, and particularly in recent months. So, you know, people get by, but it's really an increasingly challenging place.
You also mentioned Egypt. How has the instability in that region affected the regions you work with?
For us, you know, the main impact has been on our programs and our staff in Gaza, that some of the instability in Sinai, the security operations to try to deal with that stability, and then most significantly the closure of the tunnels into and out of Gaza, and the restrictions on the official border crossing. That's had a direct, again, impact on economic activity in Gaza. It's had a direct impact on Gazans' ability to get out or to get back in. You know, that has had a spillover effect most prominently in Gaza, not so much in Jerusalem or the West Bank.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about Catholic Relief Service's history in the region? You've been there 50 years now, is that right?
Yes, we actually just celebrated our 52nd anniversary. And so the office was permanently established in 1961. We had done some work prior to that through partner organizations, but we've had a continuous presence for the last 52 years. We currently maintain an office in Jerusalem. We have an office in Ramallah, an office in Bethlehem, and then the office in Gaza. We've done a variety of activities over the last 50 years. I mean, initially it was very much geared towards an emergency humanitarian response. We did a lot of food and non-food item distributions. We did work with vaccination teams, community health workers. Over time, that evolved to a heavier focus on infrastructure, particularly, you know, rural infrastructure, you know, roads, classrooms, full school buildings. That then over time expanded to also include large-scale water infrastructure for rural communities, both for productive uses and for domestic consumption. In recent years, we've added a peace-building component to our work. We've also increasingly focused on food security, and then most recently an increased focus on civil society strengthening, civic participation, that working with grassroots organizations to enhance their capacity to do broad-based grassroots advocacy, both to hold government accountable, to make government more transparent, to enhance citizens' ability to interact with their leaders, with their stakeholders, and also to engage more marginalized groups and give them a voice, be they physically disabled, physically handicapped, ethnic minorities, youth, again, is a major area of focus for us, women's engagement, things like that, depending on needs as articulated by communities, because, again, we don't try to come in as if we have all the answers, as if we have the solutions in our back pocket. But a big part of what we're there to do is to listen and work with communities to design solutions to their self-identified challenges.
Could you talk a bit more about the peace-building efforts and how those have sort of developed and how they've been received?
Sure. So, you know, we, as a subsidiary of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, are beholden to their position on the peace process, which is very clearly and very explicitly, and has been for a long time, for a just, secure, and stable two-state solution. And so our peace-building work is done to help lay the foundation for that eventual two-state solution, for the peaceful and lasting resolution of the long-running conflict, which has been so destructive and so painful for so many different people. The work that we do is small. It's mainly done on a person-to-person basis. It's focused. You know, we try to be as sensitive and as we can to the larger dynamics which are at play. And obviously, in the current environment of the restarted negotiations, which the United States has been heavily involved in and moving those forward, we feel like our role is again to help plant some of the seeds for communication, dialogue, nonviolent conflict resolution, largely with youth, primarily within their own communities. Again, looking towards the future, towards again laying some of this foundation for creating the conditions in which peace can eventually flourish. It's challenging work. It's not necessarily as attractive as some of the income generation activities or, you know, infrastructure, things like that, that bear an immediate tangible fruit. We understand that, particularly with something like peace building, that it's a slow, long-term process, and we try to remain hopeful and keep our eyes on that longer term impact.
What has been the response to the work that you have been doing, whether peace building or otherwise?
You know, to the best of my knowledge, we enjoy a pretty good reputation that we've, again, it's a long-term commitment. It's obviously a major priority for the U.S. Catholic Church. It's a priority, a strategic priority for Catholic Relief Services specifically. We're fortunate in that we've been able to hire and retain incredibly talented, hardworking, and committed staff. We have a very broad network of really sophisticated, talented partner organizations. We have a very close relationship with the local Catholic Church and coordinate and execute our work in partnership with them. And again, the work that we do is done under the development frameworks of the host governments. So I think that our long-term reputation for transparency, for accountability, for delivering high-quality work on time, the quality of the people that we work with, the network of partnerships that we have, has enabled us to have a pretty strong reputation, to be very much welcomed into the communities where we work, to work with some humility and self-awareness helps us to maintain those good relationships. And so I think we've been fortunate that really the work that we do is grounded in community acceptance and community engagement with our programs.
Are there any challenges that are unique to the fact that you are a Catholic organization in the area?
I would say, in many ways, it's an advantage for us that obviously it is the Holy Land that issues of faith are prominent within the conflict. They're the primary reason why communities around the world are so interested in what happens in Jerusalem and in Israel and the Palestinian territory, and so that Catholic connection really grounds us in the local church. It enables us to partner more effectively. I think it helps that our guiding principles based on Catholic social teaching encourage us to approach our work with humility, subsidiarity, with preferential option for the poor and so forth. And it helps us to be an engaged, honest broker within the larger context there. So in other places, it may be a challenge. Other countries where we work around the world. But my experience in the last year and a half that I've been in the Holy Land is it's actually an asset for us and helps us to do more accountable, more sustainable work.
So what are the most common misconceptions about Gaza and the West Bank that you encounter when you're having conversations about these regions with people from outside of those regions?
Well, I think it's been much less in the news in recent years. I think people aren't necessarily very aware of what's going on. I think there are misperceptions about the quality of life, about the priorities of people within the region. I think there are misperceptions about how dangerous it is that I often get asked. Aren't we? I'm there with my family, and I'm asked, aren't we afraid for our safety or whatnot? And at the moment, in particular, it's actually a very stable, safe place to be. There's often a misperception about some of the nature of the conflict and some of the history. And so, what we try to do when I speak about our work is to be very even-handed and non-biased and just present a perspective from the field that takes into account the narratives of both parties, both Israelis and Palestinians, to again promote that U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops mandate in favor of a just, lasting, and secure peace process, and to just reflect that the daily life of people in the West Bank, in Gaza, and Jerusalem is not in many ways that dissimilar from that with people in the United States, but just with this ever-present looming conflict. We have a responsibility and an opportunity to be actors promoting a resolution to that conflict.
And what about life for Christians in the region? What are some challenges for them?
Well, the Christian community is quite small. It's small and shrinking, unfortunately, and particularly in Gaza. There's only a few thousand Christians left, maybe a few hundred Catholics in the West Bank as well, and in Israel, that the populations there are quite small. Christian communities face the same challenges in terms of movement, economic opportunity, as other Palestinians do. They are, again, as a very, very small minority, they have challenges with having a voice in the public sphere, of accessing resources and opportunities. I think it's increasingly frustrating for the Christian community that they feel increasingly marginalized and even less able to access economic and other opportunities, political opportunities than other people in the region. So, you know, we continue to see this exodus of Christians. And I know one of the major concerns of the local church and the global church is that, you know, the Holy Land not become some sort of a Christian theme park, that, you know, the Palestinian Christians who have been there for generations, I mean, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, are, you know, the living stones of the Holy Land, that in addition to the churches and the religious sites and the places of pilgrimage, that it's really the local Christian community that breathes life into the church. And if that is lost, I think we would see that as a real tragedy, and that's something that as American Catholics, as you know, the global church, it's something that we should pay attention to and do what we can to support that community to make sure that isn't lost.
Now, you've also been a country representative for CRS in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. How do your experiences sort of compare or contrast? It seems like you've been in a lot of places that mm-hmm. most people would consider quite challenging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Afghanistan for 3 years. I spent a couple of years in Pakistan and Sudan and Zimbabwe before that. So, you know, it's been a privilege to work with CRS in these countries that they, you know, they have been difficult circumstances. You know, Pakistan after the earthquake, or you know, being in Darfur during the conflict there in 2004, 2005, 2006. Those difficult circumstances, while they do sometimes bring out the worst in people, also bring out the best. And so I've had opportunities to work with just incredibly committed, hardworking teams, you know, doing work that was life-saving in many cases, where we were able to have a direct, immediate impact on people's lives in these really, you know, difficult humanitarian or man-made disasters. You know, in Afghanistan, we have just a fantastic operation there, where in some incredibly poor rural marginalized communities, CRS is able to partner really effectively with local communities to help them gain access to education, to be more productive in their agricultural practices, to you know, have greater opportunities for themselves and for their children. So, you know, within CRS, we try very deliberately to share lessons across country programs, to share ideas throughout the agency, to rigorously document our successes and learn from our mistakes as well. And so I've tried as best I can to apply the lessons that I learned from our Afghan team to the situation in Jerusalem, West Bank, and Gaza, and wherever my next assignment was, I'll be able to take the lessons that I've learned from the team in Jerusalem and translate those there.
What challenges do you feel you face personally? Do you feel fatigue through the work that you're doing? Do you feel hopeful?
Mm-hmm. You know, personally, I'm very fortunate. I'm there with my family, with my wife and our children. You know, it's a very supportive office environment that we have. I think, you know, the larger frustrations of the intractability of the conflict, of the challenges that our local staff face in their day-to-day lives, you know, the feeling occasionally that we do work so hard and confront so many challenges, and yet the you know, the conflict persists, the restrictions on movement and access and economic opportunity continue to be pretty pervasive. And so, yeah, that's the thing that takes the greatest toll. I mean, it's different from, you know, work in Afghanistan, certainly, you know, where we're dealing with an out and out, you know, conflict, and, you know, we have to be incredibly engaged in staff safety on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, personally, it's very rewarding, challenging, and interesting work. It's a beautiful part of the world. It is, of course, the Holy Land, and in many ways is, you know, at the center of a lot of world events. So it's an exciting place to be. But the work itself, you know, it grinds you down. But that's why we get into the business, right? I mean, if it was easy, everybody would do it. So,
well, very good. Well, thank you so much for your time and for sharing the information about the work that you do.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Appreciate it.